You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. You know, it's that time of the year again, and I'm not talking about the baseball playoffs. It's Nobel Prize time, and this week the winners of this year's prizes in physiology or medicine, physics, and chemistry were announced. Recognized this year are scientists who showed that a bacterium, not stress, causes ulcers. Scientists who explained how a laser works and used that information to make very precise optical measurements. Scientists who discovered a more efficient way to synthesize some chemical compounds found in things as diverse as medicines, plastics, state-of-the-art baseball bats. I worked in baseball there somehow. We'll finish the hour today with a roundup of this year's Nobel Prizes in the sciences. And joining me now to talk about the prizes is Joe Palca, science correspondent with NPR in Washington. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Ira.
Let's start.
You sure you don't want to talk about baseball?
Well, we've got 20 minutes. You want to talk?
Okay. No, we'll get to that later.
We'll have a beer later. We'll discuss it. Let's start with Monday's prize in medicine and physiology, because this was a prize won for a discovery that seems really commonplace now, but at the time, it was pretty controversial, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, as you said, everybody knew that stress caused ulcers. I mean,
of course,
that was a staple even in sitcoms. You know, that's right. Why, oh, my ulcer, you know, because he had a stressful job. And so then you have this Australian scientist, Robin Warren, who starts noticing these strange bacteria that he's finding in the stomachs of patients who have ulcers. And he's wondering, well, you know, what are they doing there? Well, why was it surprising to find bacteria in the stomach? Well, because the stomach is extremely acidic. And the theory was that you didn't get bacteria in such highly acidic environments. But there they were. And what were they doing there? And what could it be? And he was joined by a younger clinician named Barry Marshall. And Marshall was quite intent on proving that these things had something to do with irritation in the stomach lining, to the point that he took a beaker of them and he drank a beaker of this bacteria, H. pylori, you know, without a stomach problem before that. And he certainly developed one because, according to his own description, he threw up for about 10 days. And endoscopy showed that he indeed did have inflammation of the lining of the stomach. And, of course, that's what the step before getting an ulcer. So now it's pretty well accepted. But I say that you still see these caveats, like, why don't they test for H. pylori all the time in ulcers? And the answer is, well, you know, stress causes ulcers. So it's well known, but it's not necessarily 100% of the time changed practice. Let's put it that way.
And don't try this at home for that experiment.
No, please not.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking with Joe Palca about this year's Nobel Prizes, and starting off with medicine or physiology. But real doctors, I mean, those who really know their stuff, they do prescribe antibiotics.
Absolutely.
Now for
Yeah, that's part of the treatment. Although I haven't been one of the people to develop one of these ulcers, but I'm told that the treatment is unpleasant.
There's a
triple drug regimen, and it's just lots of pills, and there's antibiotics, but there's also these there are things that prevent acid production in the stomach, and together they don't make you feel very good. But then you're cured, so I guess that's worth it.
Well, there's also an interesting story about these two scientists. Is there not about really expecting a call? They thought, you know, they should win this thing for a while.
Well, you know, I guess it's a question of, you know, maybe it's a lark, and maybe who knows, you know. But they apparently have been dining together every October on the night that the prize that the physiology or medicine award is offered. They've been together so that they, if the call came, they'd both find out at the same time. And so this year it came. It's one of those things, Ira. You know, the Nobel Prize, if you look at the will that Alfred Nobel left, it says for discoveries that change the world. And this was clearly one of those things before this, nobody knew about H. pylori, and then they knew about it. So it was really a discovery. It fits the category very nicely.
Yeah, so they were sitting over dinner together, and one said, hey, this is for you.
Actually, the call is funny. So apparently they called, if I've got this right, Robin Warren first. And he took the call, and they said to him, don't tell anybody. And he said, well, I'm having dinner with Barry Marshall. Can I tell him? And he said, no, you can't tell him. And finally they said, look, he's right here. I mean, let me tell him. So finally they relented, and they let them pass the message along.
Wow, that's a great story. All right, let's move on now to physics. This year's Nobel went to a physicist, one physicist for his theoretical work, and two for their experimental work. You want to
right.
fill us
so
in
this
on
is Roy Glauber, who mm-hmm. is the theoretician. He's 80 years old now, and he's at Harvard University. And Ira, if you seriously are expecting me on the radio to explain optical, quantum optics, then
that would truly
need a longer program.
That would truly be spooky action at a distance on your part.
I really confess that as someone who trained as a psychologist and worked as a journalist, quantum optics is past me. But I listened to David Kestenbaum, who is a physicist and right. actually trained at Harvard, where Glauber is, interviewed Glauber the day that he won the prize. I listened to the interview, and David said to him, well, can you explain what you did in simple terms? And he said, well, no. So, I mean, if he can't, I take a little bit. But just to give the sense of it, right. Which is, I think, what I can do, you know, it's been known for 100 years that light has this funny quality. You can look at it as a wave, but you can also look at it as a particle, as a photon. And the mathematics that explain the behavior of photons wasn't very well explained. And in fact, people were making things using the quantum properties of light, such as lasers, before they really understood all about it. And so really, that's the other part of this award went to John Hall at the University of Colorado, and he's also at the National Institute of Standards and Technology in Boulder, and Theodore Hench at the Max Planck Institute for Quantum Optics outside of Munich. And they used some of these optical, quantum optical properties of lasers to develop techniques for measuring, as you said, very precise measurements of things, distances and speeds or differences in speeds of things.
And why is it important that we know these very precise things?
Well, you know, again, the practical applications, you know, we reporters are always hammering on Nobel Prize winners to say, what's this going to be useful for?
Right.
And they scratch their heads a little bit on this one. Presumably, it will be very useful for a better understanding, for example, of things inside the atom where you want to get precise measurements. But the Nobel Committee suggested that one of the things that might be useful is, let's say you're going on an intergalactic voyage and you want to know exactly if you're headed in the right direction. Well, if you're off by a few millimeters right here around the orbit of Earth, that can translate into being missing your target by millions of miles when you get there, right? Because of, you know, the fantastic differences, these little differences in angle make a big difference. So presumably, if you can measure something very accurately, you'll get to where you want to be going in an intergalactic trip. Or, you know, global positioning satellites, knowing where you are on Earth depends on a very precise measurement of how long it takes for the signal from two different spacecraft that you do know where they are to get to where you are.
Right.
And so you want to, the more accurate you are, then the better you know where you are on the Earth, which is good to know. I'm right here in NPR headquarters. That's close enough
to
me.
Well, you know, I could think of at least one other thing. If you want to measure creep in the, you know, in plate tectonics or something, and these things that move tiny fractions of an inch a year. And they have all these measuring devices out there and along the fault lines. Maybe this would make really a much more accurate one that they might
measure. I've got it. We call it IRA's creep detector.
Creep meters. Well, don't put IRA and creep in the same sentence anymore, because people will get ideas and they will probably be right. I don't think the scientists were thinking along those lines when they did this. Let's move on to chemistry. Tell us about the chemistry prize.
Well, chemistry went to three people. This was Yves Chauvin, who is retired from the French Petroleum Institute, and then two Americans, Robert Grubbs and Richard Schrock. Grubbs is at Caltech, and Schrock is at MIT in Cambridge. And basically, yes, I think you said in your introduction, they found a way of making a reaction take place that nobody thought would really actually take place. And I'm going to say the name of the reaction. It's olefin metathesis. And then I'm not going to say that again either, because like quantum optics, it's a little bit, as they used to say, beyond the scope of this course.
It's above your pay grade.
But basically, once again, so here we go. Carbon molecules form bonds with other molecules, but they also form bonds with themselves. And these are sometimes known as carbon-carbon double bonds. And there can be molecules hanging off either end of one of these carbon-carbon double bonds. And you sometimes want them to change places, because when they change places, the molecule develops different personality, different physical characteristics. And it was thought that it was too hard to get these things to metathesize or change places, but Yves Chauvin discovered that you could under the right circumstances. And it was one of those observations that kind of got overlooked for a number of years, and then it was sort of rediscovered. And Schrock and then more importantly, Grubbs found other things that would catalyze this reaction, make it go more efficiently, more smoothly, and has really, they say, revolutionized organic synthesis, because you can make lots and lots of compounds without a lot of energy. You can do it at room temperature and in a very convenient way for organic chemists.
Mm-hmm. And once again, one of the winners is using this method to make a new material for baseball bats, bringing baseball into this.
Again, so I was interviewing in one of these amazing things. So Robert Grubbs, you know, the question somebody just asked me from Caltech, how did I find him? Because actually I didn't. My editor, Allison Richards, was helping me track down people right after the prize was announced. And she got a home number from Grubbs, who lives in South Pasadena, I think, and called there. And apparently his son answered the phone, and his son said he's in New Zealand. And so he gave her the number in New Zealand. So I call him in New Zealand. And he was, of course, very pleased and flattered, and we had a little conversation. And I said to him, okay, now that you've explained this to me, can you give me a specific example? And he said, well, they're pharmaceuticals and they're new materials. And I said, well, like, what kind of new materials? And he said, well, it's not a very important part, but it's a baseball bat. And I said, oh, great. Tell me more about that, because now we're in a place that I understand.
Right.
You know, we've come down from organic chemistry synthesis to baseball, which I'm a little better at. So he said it turns out that this company that he formed called Materia is working with a company that makes baseball bats, and it's a new kind of hardening thing so the bat won't shatter, and they've got some other things that they're putting into the handle to make it more resilient. So it's just an interesting thing. But these are the example of the kind of compounds that you might have made before, but you might not have, and now you can fairly easily.
Hmm. Talking with Joe Palca about this week's Nobel Prize announcements on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow. When you reached Robert Grubbs, was he was well ensconced? Had been told about the Nobel Prize by then, and
well, I think
has
I
done
know,
partying
well,
the, and
no. I mean, he hadn't done nothing at that particular moment, because so the timing was that the prize is announced at 5:45 in the morning Eastern time, which is 11. I think it's 11:45 in, or 10:45 in. I mean, I've got the times wrong, but anyway, 5:45 in Washington, and they had just they literally call the winners, and then they make the announcement once they've told the winners. And we were on the phone with him in 15 minutes, and he was, you know, at that point a little, I think, surprised that we'd found him in Christchurch, New Zealand, and totally tickled, and But he's a bit of a low-key guy, and he sounded kind of tired. He said he had just come back from a 6-day tour giving a lecture every day all around New Zealand, and he said the first thing he was really looking forward to doing was getting a good night's sleep. He said, I think tomorrow I'll be ready to face this. And,
well, the reason I ask is I remember when David Baltimore won the prize back in the 70s, I got him on the telephone and was doing a long interview with him. It lasted about 15 to 20 minutes. And I noticed that as we were going on through the interview, he was beginning to be a little less responsive and beginning to slur his words and things. And I said, did I get you at the wrong time? He says, well, I'm in the middle of finishing off a bottle of champagne at a party here in my lab, you know.
Yeah.
So that explained a whole lot there. And I was wondering if sometimes if you reach people like Grubbs or someone else, they might be in the middle of their parties. And
yeah, well, usually because of the timing, I think when David Kestenbaum reached Roy Glauber, he was in his pajamas because it was so early in the morning and Glauber was on the East Coast. So it's fun. I mean, this is one of the fun times in this job. It's a little nerve-wracking because you got to, you know, it's like finding the needle in the haystack. But now with the internet, you track people down, and because they won the Nobel Prize, you figure they won't mind getting a call at 5 in the morning. Normally, I'm a little reticent to call people at that hour. But
And do you find any age change? I mean, and just in general. I mean, you always think that it takes them 20, 30, 40 years to win prizes sometimes. And now, it's almost when was this discovery made? What, 10 years ago or so?
Well, the physiology or the H. pylori was in the mid 80s, so I guess we're talking about 20 years. The physics prize, I guess that's also from the 60s and probably 70s. And maybe more recently. And the chemistry, again, the initial work by Chauvin, I think, was in the 70s. Yeah, it's interesting. Usually they tend to be awarding to, you know, more senior people, but there seem to be two kinds of awards. One for things that, you know, blow your socks off and change the world. I mean, the one that always since impressed me is Carey Mullis. I mean, he was just a few years after PCR. Now, you know, as a scientist, I don't think Carey Mullis has continued in the same kind of stellar way that David Baltimore or Harold Varmus or somebody like that. But anyway.
But then again, how many of them got their inspiration from driving down, was it Route 1?
I think so.
And having, he told me, you know, I sort of had an epiphany while I was driving down the highway and had to pull off. And, you know, you never know where this flash of insight is going to come from. So we'll have to see.
I'm still waiting for mine, my flash of insight.
and they've raised the amount of money they give away in the Nobels.
Well, I think it depends on how the stock market's doing and how the money they've invested is doing. I don't actually know the formula for how much they give out, but I think it's worth $1.3 million this year. And, you know, I mean, that's, you got to split it three ways. You're practically nothing now.
Life is rough. All right, Joe. Thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Sure.
And have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Joe Palca, NPR science correspondent in Washington. That's about all the time we have today. Our program is produced by Annette Heist, senior producer Karen Vergoth. Charles Berquist is our director and web producer. And we had help today from Anne-Marie Cunningham and Ramona Jenkin. And we want to say congratulations to Charles for the birth of a new boy, Paul, and I hope he and his wife, Kathy, are doing well, and we send our best wishes out to them. And I hope to see Charles back in the office soon, because we need him there. If you'd like to write us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, and you can find Science Friday's Kids Connection there. Free curricula for Teaching Science Friday. Just click on the Teachers button. We also have our podcasts up on sciencefriday.com, and you can download them and take them with you. I'm Ira Flatto in New York. What is